You're listening to Stand Out with Ian O'Connell, Wednesday evenings from 8 p.m. here on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome to the show tonight. I hope I find you well on this Wednesday evening. I'm delighted to say that my guest this week on Stand Out with myself, Ian O'Connell, is Mary O'Donnell. Mary has a Master's in Aeronautical Engineering. From a dream to become an astronaut to high-performance long-distance triathlons to now exploring aerodynamic advancements in cycling, Mary has a very interesting story, and she's working now. She has gone over to America working with NASA and Boeing, and in Houston she got a scholarship to look over there and spend time over living there, working in that industry. But she's now back in Limerick and she's working all things aerodynamics, particularly in the cycling industry. So sit back and enjoy the show. Thanks a million for joining me today. I'm delighted to have you on the show for a chat. How are you keeping?
I'm all good. Thank you so much for having me on.
We were saying the weather isn't great out there. You must be looking forward to the summer as well, are you?
Oh yeah, I think we all are. It's been, the weather's been pretty terrible these last couple of weeks, so hopefully we'll have a good summer this year.
Exactly. I like to ask my guests at the start, I suppose, about growing up. Obviously, you might be obviously into sports from a young age. I know you've done a bit of swimming when you were younger as well. Do you want to just, you're originally from Cork, for the listeners, do you want to just give them a quick background on what you were like growing up?
Yeah, sure. So I grew up in Cork. I went to an all-girls school in Fermoy. And yeah, I suppose when I was younger, I was always kind of just a bit of an odd kid, which I think has kind of stood to me growing up these last 25 years. As a swimmer, originally, I loved swimming. Like, I would literally be coming home crying from swimming because I just loved it so much. I was always really like outgoing and active. I was also really into like my technology. I loved like my Nintendo. I loved Pokemon. I loved art as well. I think it's funny. I'm an engineer now, and having that kind of creative side to me kind of growing up and kind of just, you know, throughout life, being able just to draw as well has always been a really nice hobby to have. I suppose I did have kind of like a tough kind of childhood in terms of, you know, struggled a lot with my mental health. Kind of went through a bit of a bad eating disorder during my secondary school years, which again was just a really tough time. You know, it's a big weight to have on your shoulders from like 13 to 18, and you know, sometimes it sticks to you a bit longer. But you know, I got a lot of resilience from it, and I think I've always been kind of really mentally tough in that I was able to kind of deal with that eventually. Like, still can say that it was quite tough to go through, but that I was able to deal with it and, you know, come out the other end. And, you know, I was really lucky that I kind of had the resilience to get back into training and then also get really into studying, which I really wanted to go to UL. So that's kind of why I'm in Limerick now. So I studied pretty hard during my leaving cert and I did aeronautical engineering. I got my dream course because I wanted to be an astronaut. And yeah, since then I've been, you know, into aeronautics, aerodynamics as well. I'm an aerodynamics engineer now. And then after swimming, I kind of went further then into endurance sports. So I started marathon training during COVID. I think kind of everyone else did during COVID. And then that kind of went on to triathlon. Got really into like Ironman full distance triathlons. And now I'm an ultra marathon runner, which it seems really crazy since when I was a swimmer, like I did not want to run more than 5K.
Go away, really?
Yeah.
I think during COVID as well, a lot of people did start doing the kind of 5Ks when you were able to go to that. Remember, there was like the parameter that you could go 5K so far.
Yeah, it was crazy thinking like, I don't think I could go through another lockdown. I found it really, really tough. Like, I was living up in Limerick at the time, even though there was no university on. And the only thing that I had was running. Like, literally, I didn't see any of my friends for ages. I barely saw my family. I barely went back to Cork. But all I would just do was run. I'd be literally up at like 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'd be running. Because like, again, like, that's all you had to do during that time.
It's mad thinking back on it now, like, isn't it?
Yeah, never again.
It's crazy. I suppose did you enjoy the academic side of school? Obviously, you were going through tough times during secondary, but did you enjoy the kind of academic side of school?
Yeah, I definitely found that even when I was like really, really struggling, that academics and trying to get back to sport, that was my release. And obviously when I couldn't do sport because I wasn't allowed, I did have my academics. So I would have done very like STEM-based subjects. I did physics, high-level maths, chemistry, and I was the only person in my year to do the applied maths leaving cert. So I still remember, like, me just being there, the only person in the room, for the exam, and it's just me and the adjudicator. And I was like, well, like, just me and you for the next 2.5 hours. But no, I really, really enjoyed. Like, I had such a fantastic physics, maths, and applied maths teacher was all the same, and he was also like the coach for like the football team. So if there's ever a match on, he was gone. I'd literally have no school all day. But I really, really loved like applied maths and physics, like bringing those together. It was just it's such a fantastic and really fascinating subject. I've always really just like loved like maths and equations, like figuring out problems and stuff. They were just they're great subjects, and I'm only just. I kind of regret that we didn't do like, say, like the likes of like engineering and tech graph or DCG or anything in my school. But again, I think that's just, it's just a common theme in girls' schools, and I think it's getting better. But like, yeah, at the time, you had to kind of, you had to do a grind or something if you wanted to, yeah, do the likes of engineering or tech graph.
Do you think that there is, I suppose, maybe for women and girls, do you think that there, like you said, they're in all girls' schools, is there, could there be better opportunities and better kind of support for girls that want to go into that kind of area after school?
I think it's definitely getting better, and like there's obviously all these like really great initiatives, like for instance like the I Wish the festival that I was at recently, like really pushing to get girls into STEM subjects. And I think, you know, we're seeing that now, like we've these really successful leaders in the industry, whether that's science, technology, engineering, or maths. And yeah, like, you know, we're moved so far on from, say, just girls doing like music, they're going to choir, they're doing home economics. STEM is really becoming, I think, the forefront for choices for girls. And I even in UL now, like we have such a fantastic range of different subjects, engineering subjects. And yeah, the I think we're definitely bridging the gap for like, say, like 50-50 balance, or just even just making, you know, like there were 6 girls I think out of 60 doing aeronautical engineering for me, which was actually a lot in comparison to years before that. We've great initiatives, we've scholarships, we've opportunities, we've work placements that are really aimed at girls, because that's just something that we need right now. We need those supports, and you know, further down the line I think that's going to get better, and it's just going to be more equal. But yeah, I think we're in a really great place in terms of getting more women into STEM and all of those more like technical, like apprenticeships and like trades as well. Like it's come so far, and it's great to see.
My cousin actually, she's doing a course at the moment in Lieber here in Killarney, but she's doing a electrician, but she's there's only 2 girls in the year, and like she was talking to the tutor and he said like that it is getting more common, girls getting into that kind of side of things, which is great to see obviously. I suppose when you did go through that time with the eating disorder, that kind of impacted your sporting ambitions for a while, did it, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I completely gave up sport for maybe 4 years. I just wasn't allowed.
Really, yeah.
I didn't even take part in PE, and I was just kind of afraid, and because it was so hard for me, and like I'm quite competitive. So if you told me, oh, go for like an easy walk, or we're going to do this like fit easy fitness class, I'd be like, okay, we're going to get 110% in this fitness class. You know, I have a really like addictive and like motivated personality. But I think going through that time and like, you know, it's such a cliche to say like you don't know what you have until it's gone, and that was the only thing that I wanted to do was just to go back swimming. And I was so lucky that in my leaving cert I actually did get to go back swimming. And you know, I probably peaked at swimming then. Like I just trained so hard, and like I didn't go out a lot, I just studied and swam, and I was just so glad to be back swimming, and like it was fantastic. But then when COVID came along and the swimming pools were gone again, I was like, what again? What am I supposed to do with my time? So that's how I got into running. And like I said, like I do have this really addictive personality, so I just went straight into running. And like as soon as I got that bug, like runner's high is a real thing, like it was straight away to the marathon distance. And then after I trained for my marathon, I actually went over to America then, and you know, I found like such a love for like the outdoors, and I loved like really long distance hiking, open water swimming. And it's like, wow, like there's such a big life out there that you can just do within sport. Then I got really into triathlon because I had a couple of friends from home. I used to be a lifeguard as well, who were really into triathlon, and like I was lifeguarding in Youghal, and that's like the almost mecca of triathlon, I believe, in Ireland. So yeah, you see everyone out and they're running, they're swimming, they're cycling, and you can't help but want to do that. So as soon as I got in triathlon, I wanted to do an Ironman. So Doing the long distance, started off the half Ironman distance and went up the Ironman distance. I won the national champs for the long distance triathlon last year in Killarney. It was a fantastic day.
Really?
I really loved it. It was a tough day though. Like we did the Ring of Kerry for the bike ride, which was just, it was diabolical, but it was so much fun. And like, it was the hard man. And like, what I love about Ironman and like endurance sports is that I like them because they're so difficult. Like, yeah, obviously, it is relative. Like someone's 5K could be equivalent to someone's 50K, but to me, it's like as far as you can go for as long as possible. So that's how I got then into ultra marathon running. I ran my first like 50K in 2022, I'm gonna say, and now I'm training for my first 100 miler. So that's a month now from this weekend. But like again, I dream about it every single night. It's like, oh my God, this is something that I've never done before. It's gonna be so hard. It's gonna be overnight. It's gonna be fantastic. I just can't wait.
And like you said there, the Ring of Kerry, when I had my accident in 2017, about 10 of my friends, they'd done the Ring of Kerry to as a fundraiser, but they said it's only when they'd done that they kind of said, we take the environment and nature in Ireland for granted. Like, and I'm sure, like you said there, you do a lot of hiking. Do you think that we don't appreciate what we have in Ireland as much as we should?
100%, and I've really seen that when I've kind of gone more so like off-road. Like usually when I do triathlons it's on road, but I do a lot of trail running and hiking now, and like you see all these gorgeous photos of like the Dolomites or the Alps, and it's like if you go up say like Silvermines, I was there last weekend and it's a fantastic hike, or if you go up the Galtees, it's like you can get some fantastic views, and it's like they're literally on your doorstep, but you're probably within like maybe like a 50 km radius of a fantastic hike no matter where you are. And it's so special in Ireland. You have that, the green, you have the hills, you have the lakes, you have the sea as well. And like the weather's always going to be terrible, we're rarely ever going to get a great day in Ireland for a hike, but you have to appreciate that as well. And like if you just like look around and it's like it is actually gorgeous, and once you're out there like you're 3 or 4 hours into a run and you're like, oh, I don't know when the end is, but you look around and you're like, this is our country. It is actually stunning. It is fantastic. And I love the Ring of Kerry now. Like Miles Gap is probably one of the hardest like segments I've ever done, but I even remember when I was doing the Hardman and like again a sideways wind and rain, like your knuckles are white on the brakes because you're going down the hill so fast, but you're still looking around and it's foggy and it's raining and you're like, this is actually so unique. It's exhilarating.
It is, it's unbelievable. UL, that was a big turning point in your life, like you said. Did finding your environment there, getting onto the course, did that kind of restore your confidence and everything after going through that tough spell?
Yeah, I definitely found like during secondary school, one of the things that kept me going was like, I just knew that if I got UL, it would be amazing. I didn't know how it was going to pan out, but like, even like as a swimmer, they have the 50-meter pool, and that was kind of one of the big kind of
Oh,
like
yeah, I see
attractions.
that.
I was like, oh, I have to go to this pool and stuff. And I was actually lucky enough while I was studying, I spoke to Dr. Nora Patton, who also did aeronautical engineering. She's going to be an astronaut. It's going to be amazing. And like, she had great things to say about UL. So yeah, when I got, it was literally my dream course, and my parents were gassed. Like they were saying, oh, like stay in UCC, stay in Cork, come and mind us. But like I think they see now like the fact that I got into UL, like it was UL, or I think I had a couple of courses in like Dublin maybe. I just wanted to get out there and kind of see what was available like further afield, saying that like Limerick's an hour from Cork. But no, I thought it was fantastic outside of like the academics, just like the atmosphere, the kind of collegiate community in UL, I think is just next level. The clubs, the societies, there's something for everyone. Like I fell straight into the astronomy society, the swimming club, which I just absolutely adore. Like I'm still part of the swimming club about 6 years on, 7 years on since I started in UL. The opportunities that you can get, like the work experience, I went and I worked for Boeing in Seattle for a summer, and that was just fantastic as well. And like just the supports too, and the people you meet are so fantastic. They're so funny, unique. It's just a really great atmosphere to be in, and like I'm definitely biased, but I just think that UL is one of the best campuses and colleges you can go to.
I was there actually once doing a talk about 3 years ago, but I seen they kind of brought me around just to show me the facilities, and like they were unbelievable, the pool alone, like you said. I suppose you went on a trip to Houston, didn't you? That was what was that like over there? That must have been a
Yeah, the United
cool.
Space School. So that was I still can't
Greenland
picture
for you, are
every
you?
single, yeah, like the 2 weeks that I spent over there. That was back then in secondary school, because we were lucky enough that my school was twinned with the United Space School in Houston. And yeah, it's just like a physics kind of space science engineering scholarship that just some lucky students get to go to, I suppose. And what's really exciting is that I'm actually heading back over this summer. I'm going to be a mentor. So I'm going to be helping out all of these students now and on their journey to being the next astronaut. But yeah, like you spend a couple of weeks, you're working with some of the astronauts, you're working with some amazing students from all over the world, and you're building your hypothetical mission to Mars. So, you know, you're given your brief, you build your rocket, you figure out, oh, how are humans going to live on Mars? And yeah, apart from that, then you get to go and you see some baseball games, you get to do all the touristy stuff and like the culture stuff. And it is outside of like the space science stuff, like you get to meet like students from all over the world. You see the different cultures, how they act, how they think. It is such a unique and fantastic opportunity. And I was so grateful that like our school back in Fomoy just happened to be part of this program. And yeah, like being able to come back now in a full circle moment and kind of bring these kids along and show them how amazing STEM subjects are, it's gonna be so cool. I can't wait.
Even speaking to you now the last 15 minutes, I kind of get the impression you're the person that loves kind of figuring things out and kind of figuring like equations and how can I do this and get around things, are you?
Oh yeah, like I think that's all kind of part of life, is just seeing what you can actually achieve and what you can do, you know. Like I've always definitely been different, I think, in that way, and always been trying to kind of get the most out of life. And a lot of the times it's just been myself, you know. It's been kind of hard to find people who are exactly like me or trying to achieve the exact same things as me. But, you know, one of my like biggest, I suppose, mantras is that I always want to be the role model that I wanted when I was younger. And if I was like going back to maybe 13, 14-year-old me seeing me now, I'd be like, wow, like she actually, you know, stuck to her guns, stayed true to herself, and really did achieve everything that she wanted and even more, and is continuing trying to just, yeah, make the best out of this wonderful life that we have.
What did Nora Patton's journey, I suppose, mean to you? Because obviously talking to her was somewhere that you were kind of looking towards. Like that must have been a good kind of mentor to talk to, was it?
Oh yeah, like she's so humble and down to earth for someone who wants to be so far away from Earth. But I think just what I kind of took from that is like, you know, she is kind of a trailblazing female within a very, very niche STEM subject, particularly for women. And I, yeah, at the time, obviously after my space school experience, I wanted to be an astronaut. And it was really funny, like over the 5 years of college, like my interests is always kind of like started changing. Like I wanted to be an astronaut. Then after my work experience at Boeing, I wanted to get more into aviation. And then when I started triathlon and where I am now, like I'm doing sports aerodynamics. So they've always been changing, but you know, I've always kind of stayed firmly within my background of kind of aerospace and aeronautical engineering.
When you did go to the kind of Boeing, what was that like? Did you go over to the actual place itself? You were there for a while, were you?
Yeah. So I was working over the summer. It was for my co-op experience that we have to do in aeronautical engineering, and I was based over in Seattle. And yeah, Seattle's a fantastic city. There's so much to do there. I did so much traveling around America, and like that was my first kind of experience of living super independently, like on the other side of the world almost for an extended period of time. So yeah, like I made the most of that. It's so much traveling. I was over in Hawaii. I went to Texas. I went to Portland. I went to Oregon. Did some massive hikes and cycles and stuff, and it was America's a pretty cool place.
And I'm sure you met people that you're still in contact with now, did you?
Oh yeah.
Was it 2021 you said you'd done your first marathon?
Yeah, I believe it was, which seems like so long ago now.
And like you said, you started off doing kind of small bits of running. What was your friends and I suppose family like to go from small runs all the way up to marathons?
Yeah, I think what my parents have learned now is that like, if I want to do something, like I will achieve it, or like at least try my hardest to do that. So yeah, like you know, I just start off like a lot of other people. You know, you do your 5Ks, and you know, you hate your 5Ks, and it's like, oh, I can't wait till this is over. But like again, like during COVID, you had so much time to be doing anything, and like you didn't want to be stuck inside the whole time. So it was just building up that experience the whole time. And it was actually funny, the first time I did a half marathon, which really I found that I wanted to do like more longer distance stuff. I just had a dream. I had a dream that I ran a half marathon, and I woke up at like 4 or 5 o'clock the next day, and I was like, oh, like I have to do this now. So I just
Away.
Never had ran more than 10K, and I was like, let's go run a half marathon. And I remember I was crippled after it. Like, I literally could not. I think I got plantar fasciitis after it because I was wearing these like dodgy old runners. But after that, then I was like, I love long distance stuff. It's so much fun. So yeah, like I think that kind of is probably a bit of a cliche again for just, you know, if you have your dreams, just go and chase them and follow that. So yeah, I think it's kind of a bit subconscious there.
And Sweden was the Ironman, wasn't it?
Yeah. So Sweden was my first full Ironman, and again, like that was just a fantastic experience. I was almost crying at the start line. I was like, geez, I can't believe I'm actually here. And I had a really good swimming coach who would cycle from Yall to Fromoy to coach us. And I was like, wow, like he is fantastic. And I even remember running alongside him at the end of the Yall Ironman. I was like, geez, I just want to be like him. And being able to stand on that start line then. Oh, I'm actually going to do my first ever full Ironman. It was such a surreal experience, but it was fantastic. Like, it was a really, really great day out. The water was so warm, surprisingly. I thought it was going to be really cold in Sweden. I got sunburnt, and like, my mom was there, and just like, oh, it was just amazing. It was just, yeah. I think it seems so difficult at the start when you say, yeah, I'm going to do a 4K swim, 180K cycle, and then a marathon afterwards. But once you're in it and once you've trained for it and you're reaping the rewards from your training, it's like, wow, this is amazing.
For the pieces of the Ironman, the different events, do you think that your background in swimming, if you maybe lost time in the running, cycling, do you think that you could make up the time in the swimming given your experience of swimming for so long when you were younger?
Yeah, I definitely think that knowing how to swim is a great kind of attribute to have going into Ironman. Like, obviously, it is the shortest distance, which I really wish it was a bit longer because, like, again, like that is my background. But yeah, like it's such a technical sport. You know, you're fighting yourself not drowning. You need to be able to position yourself properly in the water. You need to get the breathing right. It's so hard to get into once you're older. So I really do appreciate that I just have such a love for the water, and that's what I was going into. The cycle's fun. I think the cycle, I don't want to say it's the easiest, but I feel like, you know, once you're on your bike and you've done your training, you can just like chill out, you can eat away, and then the run is always just going to be hard anyway. It's a bit of a long day, and like you never know what's going to come after that, and like your legs are tired and you're like, geez, like why do I do this to myself sometimes? But yeah, you just have to
What's the
get through
last
it.
event in it, Mary? Is it the what kind of order does it
It's
go in?
swim, bike, run, so the run is always
Okay.
last. And yeah, it's not the same as a standalone marathon. It's so much tougher.
It might have suited you really if the swim was at the end, really, would it, if you needed to make up the time?
Oh yeah, that would be great, but I think that would be a bit too dangerous if you're already after doing like
Yeah.
maybe 6 hours on the bike and then like a 4 hour marathon and you're trying to get back into the water. I think we'd have a lot more casualties, so I would not advocate for that at all.
That's true. That's very true. Do you think that that's the physical side, but then the mental side is a another thing altogether? Like I talked to a lot of athletes on my show and people in different fields, but they say sometimes the mental side can be just as hard as the physical side. You know, when your body is getting tired and stuff, and you've that voice in the back of your head telling you to slow down. How important is that?
Oh yeah, and like it's for every single sport. If you're doing like a sprint sport all the way to endurance sport, like I have, and I've definitely found that now once I've gotten to ultra running, particularly when you're out in like really rough terrains, you're far away from like aid stations, you're running out of food, you're running out of water. You could have all the training done on your legs, but if you can't will yourself to go forward, like you've lost the race or you've lost your goal almost. So yeah, any sport, though, I think is really good for building that mental resilience. Like, you put yourself through so much hardship to kind of get what you want, even if that's going to be like seconds to like hours, depending on what sport you're doing. But yeah, building up that mental resilience is so, so key for any sport, and even just for life as well. Building those mental skills, sport is a great way to build that skill as well. And yeah, once like your legs can be going for days, but if your mind is like, I don't want to do this today. It's so hard to get out of that.
Do you see parallels between endurance sport and the work that you're doing now?
I think so. Yeah,
Yeah.
like you, I do a lot of training by myself, and like I do a lot of individual sports. I never really got into like team sports. Like I tried getting into camogie and like, you know, GA, and just like I just never really found my kind of groove in team sports. So I definitely think being able to like self-motivate and get myself up in the morning, like no one else is kind of depending on me to, it's all on myself to get myself going. You know, it really helps like my drive and, you know, I have to work by myself and I can get things done by myself. But then I also have an appreciation for, you know, if you do have help around you, if you've people at your aid stations, if you've people cooking you dinner when you get home from a really hard days of training, building on that teamwork and asking people, oh, for help or, you know, kind of advice on this, that goes then into your work as well. So like, you know, it helps you work individually as well as kind of appreciating how you can work in a team. You're working under pressure. You need to be organized. If you have a really long run or a really long bike the day after, like, are you going to get that prepared the day before? And that just goes straight into kind of anything in life as well. Like again, I said, of sports building resilience, sport just builds so many life skills too. It's a really good thing to have is just a sport in your life, whether that's, you know, if you're going to be competing or just something for your like mental health, it's a really great life skill to have.
It is, especially at a young age, like, you know, even if it's just making friends or whatever,
Exactly, yeah.
even just things like that, it is so important. I suppose, what was it like then going doing your thesis in aerodynamics? What was that like?
It was different. It was definitely very different. And it was kind of scary as well because it was so different. So when I didn't integrate a master's, so I just went straight to a master's. I didn't even do a bachelor's. But when you're in fourth year, you have to decide what you're going to do your thesis on. And I felt like if I'd finished my degree in 4 years, I wouldn't know what I actually wanted to do. I probably would have gone into aviation. I probably would have done ended up doing something that I didn't want to do just to tick a box, you know, and kind of end up in an office. And to me, kind of sitting down for like a 9 to 5, like that
Yeah.
just doesn't really gel with me as much. I kind of want to be doing something that I'm really, really passionate about. And in my head, like, I think you should be working, like, you obviously have to do things you don't want to do, but I think having the end goal shouldn't be something that you don't want to do, you know? So yeah, when I was in fourth year, I was like, oh, like, you know, if I'm going to do this master's, I really want to do something that I'm really passionate about. I want to make this matter. So I had just gotten really into triathlon and I saw that connection between triathlon and aerodynamics, particularly in the bikes. And I was like, okay, like, this is definitely something I could do. So I reached out to Trek Bikes, who offered me a project title. So they gave me some resources, they gave me a project title. And for me to go to my supervisor and say, I want to do bicycles and aerodynamics, when all of my peers were doing like high Mach numbers, they were doing like Formula One stuff, they were doing wind turbines. My supervisors hadn't a clue what I was on about, but they're like, yeah, this is aeronautical engineering. But I just fell in love with it. You know, I went over to Silverstone on my own back and I just saw like this, the Silverstone Sports Engineering Hub, where they have a huge wind tunnel that they do a load of sports aerodynamics there. I spoke to some really interesting people within the industry and like it's a really niche industry as well. And again, there's not a lot of women within sports aerodynamics, but one of my merits for finishing my thesis was I was actually really passionate about it, and my supervisor saw that I genuinely cared about the studying and like the research that I was doing. And yeah, like, you know, I took a risk. I proposed my own project, which is something that's not often done for a master's thesis. And like, you know, you usually just you take the kind of college given
Yeah.
ones. And yeah, I just ran with it, or I cycled with it. And yeah, it turned out to be really just really good risk to take because I'm now in the sports aerodynamics area and the field, and it's so unique, it's so dynamic. There's such interesting research going on. The women in aerodynamics are fantastic. The cycling in aerodynamics is amazing. So yeah, like I'm so glad I took that risk.
I always wondered, do you know when you see kind of indoor cycling, they always have that kind of helmet on that's like a funny shape, and then like when you see normal cycling outside the regular helmet, what's the actual difference between, is it the wind or what is it that they wear that helmet indoors?
So a lot you can actually wear the same helmet depending on what kind of cycling you're doing.
Yeah.
So you know you have like your standard say road helmet, which is really good say if you're like upright cycling or if you're doing something like the Tour de France, whereas if you're like in a big peloton, but if you're wearing a TT helmet, which is usually kind of what they wear in track cycling, it's a lot more aerodynamic when you're in that like kind of like tight position, and it basically, it just makes you go faster. The way it channels the airflow is a lot more effective. So you'd see that also in, say, like Ironman racing, where you can get like really aggressive with these like different aerodynamic shapes. You'll see it in like time trials as well, whether that's one person or multiple people. It's just how you can optimize the airflow depending on what kind of cycling style you're doing. Because a lot of the time, say in like the Tour de France or, you know, just like regular cycling, where you're wearing that normal helmet, you're up and down the bars, you're going up on hills, and the aerodynamic advantage that you can make, say, with a TT helmet isn't really worth it if you're moving out of position, compared to like a normal bike helmet. So being able to like kind of spot those things and learn more about those like different airflows and the different phenomena that happen depending on what shape you choose for cycling, it's been really cool.
It is a fascinating field to be working in. I love watching, the weekend before the first Formula One race, they do the kind of trials with the green dye on the cars. I love watching them and like how it works. Is there different kind of simulations then and kind of things that you can do as part of your work?
So I never really got into Formula One. I tried to watch Drive to Survive, but it just wasn't
Really?
for me, which is kind of crazy to say. But
And I
yeah,
think
like
a lot of people got into it because of Drive to
exactly.
Survive.
So it's definitely been great for the sport, but it just wasn't for me. But yeah, I know like some of the work that I do something called CFD or computational fluid dynamics. And like in a nutshell, it's basically online wind tunnels. So you can upload, say, your model of either if that's going to be a cyclist or a car, and you can just like choose depending on how fast your airflow is or how fast the body is moving. So obviously, like cars will move a lot faster than bicycles. You can see the different types of airflow, and then from that, you can make decisions on how you want your shape to look or how you can make your shape better or worse or where areas can be improved. But then the gold standard is then going to like a physical wind tunnel. So if you think of the likes of like, yeah, the Silverstone Sports Engineering Hub, it's just a basically a giant fan that blows air over a body, and you have your technicians there who can map out the airflow. They can see how fast it's moving, they can see where the phenomena such as like vortices or there's like vortex shedding or anything like that that's happening on your body, how we can improve that as well. So it's a really like nice set up, and like you can do obviously first basis as well, but being able to visualize it through either CFD if you're using like the different the greats like you see on Formula One and really picking out those different phenomena, it's like that's how we can optimize things a lot better. So yeah, no, it's super interesting. And even in UL we have our own wind tunnel, which is another really big drag, pardon the pun, to UL, you know.
100%. Is there, do you think it's more of a thing that we will see of more in the future, the kind of crossover between sports and kind of science?
Oh yeah, no, 100%. It's what it's driven on. And even now, what I see in cycling is we're trying to derive a lot from Formula One, because so much research is being done on Formula One aerodynamics that, we can just piggyback on those resources. And I was actually working for another company called Q Cycles, and their kind of mission was, yeah, deriving that Formula One ethics and kind of design philosophy and putting that into bicycles and seeing how we can kind of merge and use the same kind of designs and kind of like shapes and flow phenomena and all that kind of stuff. So that was again another really kind of really cool crossover between science, engineering and sport.
A big thing as well, I suppose, in especially the indoor cycling, the kind of materials that they use on the bikes, like kind of carbon fiber and the different weights, and how are all bikes different kind of from outdoors or kind of indoors, and the Peloton, they're all different kind of materials, would they be?
And like you can even just like see if you compare like a track bike to like a road bike to a triathlon or a TT bike, they're all different, but within the space they're very the same. And like Formula One cycling has the UCI and everything has to be within those parameters. So it's really interesting to see how people are trying to like think outside the box but within the box, and really pushing as far close to the box as possible to try make the best out of the machines, whether that is a car or whether that's a bike. And like, yeah, material science is developing at such a rapid rate. It's amazing to see how like every single year there's something new, there's something that's not been done before. Someone's twisted a rule a certain way to be able to do something different but still stay within the rule. It's like it's so cool. But yeah, like every like it's so dynamic and fast, and how people are engineering all sorts of things. It's like, how are people thinking about these? Like, sometimes you think, like, has everything been invented already? But still, some people are coming out with more stuff. So it's really cool to be part of an industry that's able to be so dynamic and changing every single time. When you think it's been done, when you think it's been complete, there's something new.
So there will be kind of strict enough rules for races that you can't cross over. Like obviously with the Formula One is the same, you can use certain parts and stuff.
And like it's a lot of it is for safety, and like obviously you've teams with bigger budgets and smaller budgets, so it is trying to make it fair as well, but like you know they always have someone in the background trying to figure something else out, so it's cool to see.
I was going to say that. Is that a thing like with the budgets? Because you see, like, even in the Formula One now, Mercedes, they're a lot faster this year than they were last year, and kind of different budgets from different kind of companies. Is that would that cross over to the same in kind of cycling?
Oh yeah, and like you see that in a lot of like different sports. Like if you compare like really big teams, like say like Team USA, like you know
Yeah.
they're obviously going to have a lot more money than say if we put up against like Team Ireland. But it's just being resourceful, you know. It's like working with the best minds that you can, and like being really thinking like how can you work with what you have to make the best out of yourself. And like you know, obviously money is a big thing in everything, and like you're never going to be able to compete with that, but you know it is it's all about being resourceful, and you can do a lot of really good things just you know using what you have.
Like you say, it's about thinking outside the box, but still staying inside the box
That's it.
to break the rules. Have you stayed relatively injury-free throughout all your kind of events and stuff that you've done so far?
Yeah, thankfully, I obviously had all of those like rookie mistakes when I went into running, and even like from swimming, like I always had swimmer shoulder. But yeah, like once you're if you're going out the gate like trying to do a half marathon, just waking up one day, like you're obviously I got my plantar fasciitis, I had shin splints, I had a really bad bout of tendinosis last year in my hamstring, which I made me stop running for quite a long time. I think I was out running for maybe like 2 months last year, but like even saying that, I did manage to get like an Ironman and you know a couple of marathons in, and then like two ultra marathons after that too. So you know it's unfortunate, but like you know it does happen. It happens to the best of us, and like if once you kind of figure it out, you know, make sure your sleep is right, your nutrition's right, doing your S&C and your prehab, and if you do get injured doing your rehab, you can stay injury free. And like I've definitely found that moving over from like road running to trail running, it's a lot easier on the joints, you know, it's softer surfaces, you're going a tad bit slower, and you're definitely getting a lot more stronger if you're doing a lot more hills up on the hills. But yeah, no, I've been lucky to thankfully never broken a bone or anything super, super serious that I've been really long time out of sport. So we'll keep it that way. So touch wood, we'll be injury free for a lot longer.
Like you said, the recovery is a big part. Do you think that the kind of Strava and all them kind of apps as well, they're kind of advancing, and like the kind of trackers, the Whoop bands and all them, do you think that they're important in for like recovery and tracking everything?
I think you have to take everything with a pinch of salt,
Pinch of salt, yeah.
in like especially like I think people grow very dependent on like wearables, whether that's like your Oura, your Whoop, your Garmin. And like this is coming from someone, I think I've worn a Garmin, my Garmin watch every single day for the last 5 or 6 years. So like obviously like I love my Garmin, but you know you can get so caught up with the likes of like sleep score and step count. And like again going back to the me having an addictive personality, I would have like you know gone very very dependent on my watch and being like okay, if I don't wake up now and my HRV isn't perfect or haven't slept well and my Garmin's telling me like oh you're not in good form, I'm not in good form. Whereas, you know, you can kind of be like, oh, you know, I actually feel fine today. I'm like, I am going to go training. Or I used to wear a Whoop, but I don't know, maybe it does know what it's talking about. But like, I'd have 21 strain and says, don't go train today. I'm like, I am going to go train today. You know, it's terrible. But I think, yeah, like you're in a sport long enough to be able to like understand your body. And you know I do have a tendency to try push myself really really hard, and that's obviously worked against me sometimes unfortunately. But I hope and I feel like I'm kind of getting to a place now where I understand like okay, I haven't slept well, and even if my Garmin is telling me oh your sleep score is 100, like you're so good to train today, I'm like I'm not doing that today. Like it's up to me now. But no, like even going back to Strava, like I used to be and I kind of still am addicted to Strava. Like I love Strava. I think it's a great app, but like again, you get so caught up with other people's times. You're like, oh, like why am I not good enough? This person's running a 5K this long, or like I'd come back from a race and I think I'd have done really well. I might have won the race, and then I see someone's done like something else, and I'm like, oh damn, I wish I did that, and now I feel bad about my own race. You know, you have to kind of, it's good to see these kind of things, but again, the comparison is the thief of joy. Like Strava is just the same as social media as anything else, and it can make you feel great, and it can also make you feel terrible. So, you know, you just have to take things in small doses. Take, you know, you don't know everyone else's journey. You run your own race. You live your own life too. But like, it is nice to check in on people and see, oh, what's this person's caption on Strava now? Me, I love a good Strava caption. So that's my biggest thing on Strava is like, anytime I'm in doing an event or if I'm doing some training, I'm like, what is my Strava caption going to be after this?
Nobody knows your body like yourself, like you
Exactly,
say. And
yeah.
I think a big thing is even boys' anger is this now, especially more than ever, they kind of compare their day one to someone else's day 30, 40. Like even looking girls looking up at the likes of the Kardashians, that they say, oh, I have to be like them. I think that's a big thing. And social media, you share your story on that as well. But it can be a great thing. But then on the other hand, it can paint it with a different brush altogether, can't it?
Oh yeah. And like, I think we're all like, as much as we say, yeah, you know, we're our true authentic selves on social media. Like there are some days where like I'll post, oh, I did a great run, or I did a great training session, had a great race. And like, especially like last year, I definitely felt like I was going through a bit of burnout within sport, and I just really just could not find the motivation of sport. And like, yeah, I'd still be posting, oh, like did this race, did that race, had a great time. But like, there was so many times when I was going to races or going to training, I was like, I just do not want to do this like at all. And I even like remember a particular race last year where it was the Olympic distance triathlon national championships. And like, yeah, I posted after it, oh, had a great race. It was such a tough race. And like, I loved it in the moment then when it was like super tough, it was super hard, really challenging course. But like, I stood at the start line for the swim, which looked absolutely diabolical. The water was so choppy. And I just started crying. And I was like, I just don't want to be here. Why did I drive all the way to Northern Ireland and to do this race? And I was like, oh my God, why did I do this to myself? I was like, I just hate this. In that moment, just before the race, I was like, I actually just do not want to be here at all. But, you know, you push through it anyway. And like, it does come back to like my own kind of like what I enjoy out of sport. And it was hard. And it was so hard. The swim was hard. The bike was hard. The run was hard. And I was really happy that I did do it. But like, you know, I wasn't going to be posting, oh, I'm here in Ross Trevor and I'm crying my eyes out because I just don't want to be here because I feel like I'm just, yeah, I just don't want to be here, you know. But I'm not going to post that, unfortunately. But you know, I'll say that, and I will admit it now. And I think I'm getting a bit more better at kind of being like, yeah, like you know, there are some days that aren't going to be great, but I know that I never regret pushing myself or you know achieving something. It's particularly, I think it's a really great kind of reward that if you really don't want to do it, but you still get it done, that you can be like, yeah, you know, I did do that. And it goes back to resilience as well, you know, even if you don't want to do it, obviously with a pinch of salt, like there are some times where you probably shouldn't be doing things that if you really feel that bad about them. But like, I know myself, I love sport. I love being active. I would have hated it more if I didn't actually do that race. But yeah, in that moment, I was like, why am I here?
And lastly, before we finish up, you said today, 4 weeks, is it, you've something coming up?
Yeah, I am doing my first ever 100 mile trail run. So 160 kilometers, the Bear Peninsula, down in Cork, and the cutoff is 37 hours, so I'll be running through the night. And yeah, it's gonna be so hard, but
Mad.
I dream about it every single night. I cannot wait. I'm literally counting down the days to it. And like last weekend, I feel like I'm ready now, so it's just kind of getting some more time on feet, making sure I'm like rested up, that I don't get injured, that I'm kind of keeping on top of my strength and conditioning. But like last week I did a 72 kilometer walk. I walked from Limerick to Cork, just as training, and I had the best time ever. And you know, it was tough. Like I started at 12:30 at night, or in the morning, at night, I don't know how you want to phrase that. And like there were some times where I was like, again, why am I here? Why do I do this to myself? But I was able to push through mentally. Like I feel like I've done the time on feet now, but that was definitely a mental challenge, and that I got that done because it took 12 and a half hours as well to do. I was like, okay, I think I'm ready to do this really big challenge. So looking forward to it now. Just need to make sure I stay injury free, and yeah, just keep on top of like the little things, recovery, all that kind of stuff.
And listen to the Garmin watch.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
Barry, thanks so much for your time on. I appreciate you coming on for a chat, and all the best with that and everything in the future.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, unfortunately, that's all we've time for tonight. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I appreciate you tuning in as always. A massive thanks to Mary for coming on tonight chatting about her own story. If you have any suggestions, questions before next week's show, you can get in contact with me through my Instagram, enoconnell321. Stay tuned in here to Radio Kerry, because Brian Priestley is up next with That's Jazz. I'll be back at the same time next week from 8 to 9 p.m. Until then, stay safe and mind yourself.
You're listening to Standout with Enoch Connell, Wednesday evenings from 8 p.m. here on Radio Kerry.